It's time for the Contempo Coding Podcast. Discussions, knowledge, and insight to help you succeed in the medical coding industry. And now, here's your host, Victoria.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the channel. I am here joined with Stacy and Yossi from Maverick Coding. They are going to be talking today about autonomous medical coding. Maverick is a AI process that streamlines medical coding for healthcare organizations by automating that process. It helps do things like decrease operational expenses, it helps reduce denials, and increases the direct to bill capabilities. So thank you so much, Yossi and Stacy, for joining us today. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourselves and a little bit more about Maverick Medical AI?
Thank you very much for inviting me. My name is Yossi Shahak. I'm the CEO and founder of Maverick Medical AI. My background is about 20 years in digital health. I've been working with large corporates such as McKesson for 11 years and other startups in the industry, mainly in the US and some in the UK. My academic background is computer science. I'm an engineer by profession, and afterwards did a business degree with Kellogg University. I founded Maverick at late 2018 for the purpose that you mentioned, transforming medical coding with advanced AI technologies. And we are a team of scientists, very skilled scientists and business professionals that came together to solve an issue that among the years, there were all kinds of attempts to solve it. But we felt that now, with the latest and greatest technology, we can find a better solution and provide it to the market. So it's myself and my partner, Mike Buzino, that is based in the U.S. In Atlanta, and other folks such as Matan Iman, which is our VP of product, and some others. We all gathered. We're completely diverse in terms of geography. R&D is in Israel, business in the U.S., some of the R&D in Europe. So we're all over the globe. Our mission is to solve medical coding for the U.S. market only. We're not looking at any other market. We're looking at only for to solve the problem in the U.S. That's in a nutshell who we are and what we do. Stacy.
Thanks, Yossi. So I have been working with Maverick for a little bit over 2 years now. So I've been serving as their subject matter expert for diagnostic radiology coding. And when Yossi approached me a little over 2 years ago and told me about what they were working on, you know, in this space for autonomous coding, I was really excited about the possibility. But I'll be honest, I was also very skeptical about the claims that were being made about the technology. And, you know, Maverick said, oh, well, we can do 85% direct to bill. And I was like, oh, please. I'm like, nobody can do 85% direct to bill. It's not possible. Because I remember going back to CAC technology, and we'll talk a little bit about that during, you know, our time together today, that CAC overpromised and well underdelivered. It never replaced coding professionals like everybody said it would. And so we never met the direct to bill thresholds with that. And so I'm like, okay, I just don't see with the complexities of medical coding how this technology is going to do much better. And then after working with them and then going through many rounds of validation and then, you know, seeing proof of concept, Maverick has been able to achieve 85%, you know, direct to bill. And we'll talk a little bit more about how they do that a little bit later on. But I've been really impressed and I'm excited about how this is going to transform the future of medical coding and actually in some ways benefit medical coders. You know, if time permits today, maybe we'll talk a little bit about the future of medical coding. I know it's scary, but I see a lot of opportunities for medical coders with the changes in technology.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of concerns there. You know, valid. People should have a healthy amount of skepticism about these things, and that's fine. But yeah, I think there's definitely some very exciting things going on in the world of medical coding that are going to be coming up with technology like this over the next few years. Can you talk to me a little bit more about what inspired you to develop this process, something that helps expedite all of this medical coding?
Yeah. So what inspired me to expedite that and to touch this subject is, I would say, technology, timing, and need. And from technology perspective, I think that we're in a very unique time today. And this revolution of data and artificial intelligence and what you can do with massive amount of data is unbelievable. And there is a light jump that happens now. And this is an historical moment. And I think that, 10 years back, backwards, after 10 years, we're going to see this moment, definitely an historical moment. And the reason is that, this whole amount of data is now being harnessed in a way that technology can understand it quickly. There is quite a lot of power to computers to analyze it and methods that can be used to analyze it. And Maverick, from this perspective, came to the market in a very, very sweet spot in terms of timing. So if we can see the technology like a triangle shape, you can see layers of technology of native and natural language processing and rule-based and all kinds of things that, by the way, you mentioned CAC, so most of them being used by CAC and still being used today. And on the top of of this triangle, there are those GPTs, those generative transformers that now we all know that about the ChatGPT, but they came to existence in the last several years. So the entire market today is still using a relatively old technology, while Maverick, when we started the work on this GPT transformers technology, and we're proud that we are part of those founders of this technology. So that gave us, from technology perspective, I would say a very strong wind tail over competition. And I saw that as definitely a unique opportunity to solve such a complex problem like that. The other things that brought me to this space is the pandemic. The pandemic created a different equation in terms of medical coding, and quite a lot of coders left the industry. So there is a need, and this need to be replaced with something, either with more headcount, which we can't find today, or with more dependency on technology. And I thought it could be a really good opportunity, to bring technology that could hold water and could not substitute completely the human factor, because I don't believe in that, but to help the human factor, to achieve better. So these two things were the main drivers, and through my career, I've been fascinated by radiology and by cardiology, and I saw those codes before, and I saw how complex it is, and I thought, with the timing and the need, I think that there is a really great opportunity to make a difference.
Yeah, and I like that. This is something that's really enhancing our existing workforce, because I've heard even over the past couple of years, and Stacy, you've heard this as well, we have this shortage of medical coders. And when we really dive into it, it's more so that there's a shortage of medical coders with a certain expertise. There's a shortage of people that have the expert knowledge of cardiology, of interventional radiology, that people are looking for specific specialties, and they want someone who's going to hit the ground running. So I think integrating some technology that's going to maybe gap some of that process, that's going to make things a little bit speedier for maybe the people that do have that knowledge, or help expedite things. I remember a couple of years ago, Bevan Erickson, the president of the AAPC, was saying that there's just such a volume of healthcare consumption anymore, and it's getting so complex that people aren't able to keep up with it because of just the massive amount of people and the massive amount of, reports and denials and coding and everything that has, medical record requests. It's just so much that we have to figure out a way to speed this up. And I think AI is going to be very helpful in that. Can you talk more though about what is exactly autonomous medical coding? When we hear that term autonomous, what does that mean?
Well, in principle, autonomous means that, you know, the reports that are going to meet Maverick Engine going to go directly to the billing software with no need for a medical coder's review. So all the medical codes are going to be generated completely automatically. And as Stacy mentioned before, our, you know, our rate is 85% of the volume that goes through the Maverick engine goes directly to Bill. So 85% going to go without human involvement. That's the interpretation of autonomous. Of course, that's being done with our, you know, infrastructure that is mostly relies on those transformers, but also relies on other machine learning and artificial intelligence methods, which we choose in between to find the relevant code.
That's awesome. And, you know, it's confusing sometimes with all of this different technology. You hear words like autonomous, like AI, natural language processing, machine learning, GPT. So all these different buzzwords, what do they mean?
Yeah, well, it's definitely overwhelming. And today it's very hard to understand or to know what do they mean and whether they really exist in your product. And I think that, you know, part of this autonomous means that this technology can generate code completely automatically. And the SLA should be seconds. It shouldn't be days. It shouldn't be hours. You know, it shouldn't be anything else but seconds. And anyone that gets more than seconds, something is not really autonomous. Something is need to be seen in a manual fashion, and that's the reason for a slow SLA. Now back to the buzzword. So machine learning learning refer to the ability of AI systems to learn from data and to improve themselves, you know, and their performance over time. The deep learning basically means that AI use quite a large database to learn from, with different type of algorithms such as neural networks that helps, you know, to digest large amount of examples, to look deeper and see patterns and learn from that. And those language models, which are part of those artificial intelligence, are being part of those deep learning AI technology, and all of them, in the end of the day, their utilization is to understand text and to create quick patterns over a large amount of text to understand how to digest it better and how to serve it to the one that asks those questions. So in Maverick, for example, we've got huge amount of text that that we got from different design partners, and these texts or these examples are our proprietary IP. We went through that, we cleaned that, because as we all know, medical coding is very subjective. So you need to make sure that, you know, what you train the system is accurate enough, and you do not create any mistakes and train the system for mistakes. So the data that you train the system should be as objective as it could be in this landscape. And that's part of the work that we're doing with Stacy to make sure that what we have is standardized and it's according to the rules and CMS and Medicare. And we use it in order to train our engine to go back and do those autonomous coding.
That's great. Yeah. And I think it's important to make sure that we're doing things like bringing in SMEs like Stacy in, just because you hear these stories that come out in the news that, oh, you know, ChatGPT, for example, had read some kind of fake article years ago and it starts generating information that's incorrect. So it's really only as good as it's trained. So if we're not putting expert people in there to train the systems, it's not going to give quality output. And that leads to further problems then down the road, right?
Exactly, and that's the reason why if you're, you know, you've got the ChatGPT today, and you can ask any question, among them also medical coding questions. And and the reason that, you know, this is not an answer is that it doesn't have the subjective data, and it's not a clean data, And the ChatGPT is not a coding platform. It's only a platform that knows how to answer based on their data and doesn't know how the relationship between the codes. And that's part of the reason that this is not an answer for a medical coding platform that's being trained on a real data that is accurate.
I was going to chime in about the ChatGPT because I've seen a little bit what it can do for medical coding. So it's kind of hit or miss. Like sometimes you can get a correct answer with ChatGPT, but I feel like the biggest limitation, like something that I learned about ChatGPT is that about the data set that it's actually pulling from. And there's a certain time frame where that gets cut off. It doesn't always have access to the most current information. So you're pulling outdated information. So you could throw something into ChatGPT right now, ask it about it. It might give you an ICD-9 code, which would be super outdated, but it's something that would occur there. So, because I was wondering about that too initially. I'm like, what if I threw something really complex in here? What is it going to, you know, give back to me? So I found that kind of, you know, interesting just to look at that limitation. But, and then again, we know the complexity of medical coding and all of the payer rules. And even when you're coding a report, even diagnostic radiology, I know people say that that's simplistic coding. It really isn't, because there are a lot of nuances of reading that report and then deciding how you're going to choose the codes from it. So working with the R&D team, you know, R&D, the data scientist people, they want everything to be black and white. Stacey, tell us what it needs to do in this instance. And they're like, can we say it's always this when this? And I'm like, well, no, not exactly. Yeah. And this is why. Yeah. And I introduce the human thought process, the deductive reasoning that goes on. So it's a challenge. It's not impossible to eventually get that into an autonomous coding product, but it certainly will take a while before it has the ability to process data exactly like the human thought process can. So it's very good at repetition. Like if something is the same, like screening mammography, who needs to look at a screening mammogram? We all know how screening mammograms are coded. But when you get into stuff where there's, you know, going through the radiology report, for example, I code from the impression, but there's an incidental finding in the impression. What's in the impression may not be related to the reason for exam, and kind of going through all of the clinical thought process as well. So it's a little bit more challenging to get AI to learn that. It's not that it can't, but those are the things that come with more and more human training and then having that expertise and that higher level of knowledge in order to get the software to give you the desired output.
Yeah, and I think in addition to that, even training it to see some of the things that are absent from the documentation, like I feel like it might be a barrier to have it see where there needs to be an addenda sometimes, or I think a lot of times like lesions, when I'm looking at lesion codes, sometimes providers aren't documenting correct sizes. So it might be trained to code that a certain way and spit out a code, but is it going to notice that some of that documentation was missing and there was an increased revenue opportunity that was missed? Yeah, and I think where the human coders are still going to come in.
Right. Well, that gets built into the training. That's where the subject matter expertise of, you know, whichever coder is working with, whichever vendor, that's where, you know, we look at reports now. And so I don't know exactly how the technology works and like all those details behind the scenes. I don't completely understand the algorithm process, but, with the technology, how, you know, it's trying to understand like how it looks at things, but it has a confidence level in when it's assigning codes. And so there are certain instances where it's looking for certain documentation. And if it isn't there, those are the types of things when the confidence level is low that go to that human coder for that manual review process. So it's kicking those out. It's finding those instances where you need the human intervention. Which is kind of cool. And so it actually helps you. I feel it's a way to better improve your documentation. We know garbage in, garbage out, regardless of any technology, that over time you have the ability to improve your documentation just based on saying, well, gee, this comes up and goes to human review, you know, all the time. If we fix this, then this is something that we can send direct to bill. You know, we don't have to look at this anymore once we fix our documentation issue.
Yeah, that's really, really fascinating. So the autonomous coding versus the computer assisted coding that we talked about that we've been using for forever, where you just type in and it kind of helps guide you to a code. How does the autonomous compare to the computer assisted coding, the CAC that we've had for forever and a day?
So, you know, from technology perspective, I'll take this part and start with it. I'll say that it's dramatically different from the CAC and others. And let's start with the flexibility. You know, Stacey was saying that programmers like, you know, rules, you know, defined rules to understand what is yes and what is no. Yes. When it happened, what you do. And I think that, you know, the majority of the CACs are still rely on a rule-based engine, which require, you know, implementing a lot of if-then type of scenarios. While in our case, our engine is by far much more flexible to adapt different jargons, different ways of coding, different payers policies, and so on. Now, where does that affect? Of course, it's affect on the accuracy and the direct to bill, but it's also affecting other places. It's affecting the implementation stage. I think that one of those drivers, or I would say the non-drivers, you know, to replace a system, is to start and collect all those rules that you that you did in the implementation with another system. And I think all those rules are being done in one system after so many years, you know, to pull them out and implement them on a new system. It takes quite a lot of time, quite a lot of efforts, and sometimes, you know, the vendor doesn't, the provider doesn't even remember them. So that's where our technology is coming in. And if we can see a bit of a legacy data, immediately we can harness all those nuances from the physician jargon to the payer policies, to the local organization policy, completely automatically by looking at the data without questioning the customer. While in CAC, you're going to have to questionnaire hours over hours, days, even months till you're going to complete all those nuances. And that's why the majority of those systems, you know, they're going to reach into a certain percentage of direct to bill gradual. While our system is going to be 85 direct to bill at go live, because by the time we go live, we know how to speak the language data. And the language that the local language of each one of those physicians, and also the rules. So the implementation is a big factor that is different. Also the maintenance itself, you know, and the nuances through the years that CMS is sending. We're very flexible to adopt new type of rules and new type of guidelines, and we release them immediately when they appear. So. This is from technology and a bit of implementation. I'm sure that Stacey got other factors, you know, to mention about the difference as well.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that people need to understand is it's not natural language processing. I still, when I talk to coders about the technology, they're so stuck in that NLP mindset that they want, they feel that it works the same way as NLP, and it does not. You know, as Yossi was saying, it's very different technology. It's actually learning from patterns. It's learning from the historical data. And what I like about this from an implementation perspective is implementation is actually pretty simple. And it's like a shortened timeline for most implementations. You know, years ago, I was an early adopter of CAC technology, you know, in the one billing company that I was a partner in. And that was a lot of work initially because you're going through, you're reviewing encounters, and then you're having to give feedback, and then they're having to write rules. And it's a lot of back and forth. And we never had confidence in sending anything direct to bill with CAC. And then working with other CAC providers, they've spent all these years building all these rules. This is like incremental, like over the course of years. And people say, oh, over 10 years, we built thousands of rules in our CAC technology. And what I like about this is if you switch to an autonomous coding solution, then that I say it's already baked into the cake. Like all those rules that you spent years and years and years building, you don't have to start over again. A lot of times when you switch to a new vendor, you're starting over again. You're not. Yeah. It's already there in your data. It's built into your data. And then with the software learning from your historical data, you don't need to spend that time. You do have the ability to make changes. One thing I will say is about, you know, talking about data quality. And if you're looking to implement an autonomous coding solution, it's very important that you're confident in your data quality because it's going to go from your historical data. And then also, if you want to make any changes to your coding, which can happen with clients, we're like, well, we've historically been coding it this way, but now we want to do it this way. We feel this is better. That needs to be clearly communicated to a vendor as well if they're working off of the historical data, because that will affect your accuracy if you're changing something from a historical pattern. So that's what I kind of help Maverick do, is we kind of dig into the historical data. I look and do coding quality checks on the historical data to see if I have any disagreements with how things are being coded, go back to the clients, talk through them. You know, why are you coding it this way? You know, if they have, you know, an explanation as to why they've documented it, it's their policy. Okay, this is the way we'll move forward. Or sometimes they say, you know what, Stacey, you're absolutely right. This has been coded wrong. We're going to go back and we're going to do coder education. And so those things can actually be fixed. And then once a client is working with the solution, if the product actually learns from the coder, like once it sees a change so many times and it's the same change over and over again, it has the ability to recognize the pattern and then change the coding based on that pattern, versus somebody making notes in their CAC application and then going back and saying, hey, these are the trends that we're noticing. There's an easy way to identify the trends, and then the software will learn from those changes. You know, once you start seeing this thing over and over and over again, it's going to know in the future when you have this pattern, this is how it's going to be coded. So it's eliminating a lot of that work even after implementation. So that's why I'm super excited about it, because I know what a headache CAC was to try to manage the rules and then get the desired output that you wanted. And then if you had some changes in documentation, you know, sometimes that threw it off. I think this is better adapted for changes, where it has the ability to recognize them a little bit easier than what CAC did in the past.
Well, that's really awesome. Can you walk me through a little bit, like, let's say I'm working for a healthcare organization and we work with Maverick, and I get a CMS transmittal and it says starting October 1st, you have to code this a different way. So I go, okay, well, starting data service October 1st, our coding has changed. So how do I then communicate to Maverick? Do I just take that and go, hey, we need this coded a different way? And then when it starts seeing those charts on October 1st, it like automatically knows, like it can just get programmed to change the coding?
Yeah, so these alerts, you know, A, are, you know, being sent by the customer. B, we are completely tuned to those alerts of CMS, and we communicate to the customer that A, we received that. We've got processes with the customer to explain them that we received them, and be able to communicate them when they're going to see it implemented and how it's going to be implemented and what's going to be affected. So with all our install base, we have those processes running, and we're completely proactive to implement them, since, you know, this is part of regulation and we need to keep up with them.
That's awesome. So what is this going to do kind of to the future of the medical coding profession?
So if you want, I can take that one as the coder. Sure. So I feel like right now, I don't know that I can say for sure what it's going to do to the future of the profession. There's a lot of questions. I know, Victoria, you and I spoke offline, you know, about this, you know, a little bit. And I feel like it's definitely going to change the role of medical coders. What your job looks like today as a medical coder is going to look very different in the future. I don't know how quickly it's going to change that role. I think the technology will be able to advance very rapidly. I have confidence in that. I mean, we've just seen that with advances in AI technology over the past few years. I don't think that the technology adoption will be slow. I think adoption by providers of the technology will be slow. That will kind be a challenge.
Kind of like when we did ICD-10. And it had been in existence for years, but until we actually got everyone in the U.S. on board.
Yeah, because you still have, I mean, you know, now all major hospital systems and large practices have an EHR. You still have providers that are on paper and are not electronic. It still exists. I was speaking to someone at a conference a couple of weeks ago about release of information, and they were saying that fax. I'm like, fax? I'm like, who still has a fax like anymore? People fax, and they said, absolutely. Yeah. Records have to be faxed. And that was like stunning to me. So you'll always have the industry lagging behind in adoption, because there are some providers that are not going to have the, you know, ability to pay for the new technology. They may not have the volume to justify, you know, implementing a new technology. Your larger healthcare systems will definitely move towards this, because there is a huge cost savings to them. There are efficiencies there. So I feel like if you're working in the physician office setting, it's probably going to come slower. If you're working in the hospitals and the larger organizations, it's going to come a little bit quicker. I feel that it's actually probably going to keep jobs in the US rather than going overseas. Because I know you've heard a bunch of stories like me. You see it all the time on social media where somebody says, I was just let go from my job. They're outsourcing the entire department, coding, rev cycle, whatever, overseas. Now I need another job. And that's done, you know, for staffing, also for cost. I mean, we know cost is a huge reason why things go overseas. The technology has the ability to reduce your cost and then keep the jobs where you need the coding professionals here in the US because you're going to need the higher skill level. So I think it's going to improve that. Will it eliminate entry level jobs eventually? I kind of have to say yes. It's going to come to that at some point in time. Again, is it going to happen overnight? So if somebody's considering medical coding as a career now, would I still tell you to pursue it? Yes, I would. Because like I said, this is going to be something that isn't going to be implemented across the board very quickly. And I always recommend to just learn more, you know, up your skill set, learn the more complex specialties, you know, learn those things that are more nuanced, build up your clinical knowledge and expertise. You know, there's a lot of information out there online where you can learn stuff for free. YouTube is great. Everybody knows Victoria from YouTube. You've taught a lot of people about medical coding, you know, where they haven't had to pay a penny, you know, to learn about medical coding from you. And there are other things out there. So it's just always trying to increase your value and then understand your role eventually will be more of an auditing role. And then you'll be using, you know, any type of autonomous solution as a tool to help you do your job. So I see, and then there's working for vendors, there's working for these companies. You know, Maverick is going to need a lot more Stacys, you know, in the future as they grow and as they expand into other specialties. So there are those opportunities as well to get involved on that side in the development. I know some people kind of look at me like, Stacy, don't you feel bad you're eliminating coding jobs? I'm like, I don't really look at it that way. I feel like it's, you know, overall going to be beneficial to the industry. And again, it's going to be different, like medical transcriptionists. When that traditional transcription role went away, their roles just changed. It's not that we don't have, you know, they're editors. They're doing things differently and we have efficiencies that we didn't have before. And coders can do rev cycle positions and other things that aren't coding. And I think they kind of lose sight of that. I've done a lot of roles that are not production coder roles. And I've worked in rev cycle and I've worked all over. And those skills are invaluable in so many other job roles that you never even think of. So I think it's just expanding their thought process and looking at other things outside of, okay, being a coder 40 hours a week, is that going to be the future role of a coder? Probably not. But the skills and the knowledge are still going to be needed.
Right. And I think there's definitely some steps that medical coders can start taking to prepare for that, being more adaptable to the technology, like you said, like learning more clinical knowledge. And again, that doesn't mean that you have to actually catheterize a patient, but you should kind of know some of the process involved in that. You should have, and that's an area where I'm still a little bit weak and I need to start working on some of my clinical expertise as well. But yeah, I'm glad you brought up, you know, revenue cycle. I've seen so many people that have said, oh, I got burnt out from coding, but were able to find great positions in ChargeMaster or somewhere else in the revenue cycle where they've been making more money than they would have as a coder. And there's so much value in that in-depth coding knowledge that they acquired, even though they're not doing like production-based coding anymore. And yeah, I think we will start seeing a lot more transition to things like clinical documentation improvement, things like auditing. I'm really happy to see that Ahima is getting on board with some of their micro credentials that they just released recently and that they're doing more things like auditing and getting into risk adjustment coding. Well, we talked about a little bit about medical coding and charts going overseas, which kind of made me think a little bit about privacy and data security. A big concern that people have is how are we making sure that we are keeping patient data secure? You know, I think people worry, they see, you know, are afraid that their medical record is going to get read by some robot and then it's going to wind up on the internet somewhere. So what are some of the measures that are in place right now to protect patient data?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I tell you that there is a bit of a misunderstanding about that. You know, till today and still today, you know, majority, I would say 80% of the medical coding is being done offshore. So there is an access, you know, from different countries to see medical data with PHI. What we're doing is that our, you know, the medical data goes through the cloud. But the cloud itself, in the end of the day, these are metals, and those metals, all of them, are not leaving the U.S. So all our metals are in the U.S. physically, literally physically, on Amazon Web Services and Amazon servers, which are located in the East and in the West Coast. Now, from data, that's for the data itself, where it's located. And from data security, my background is so many years in digital health. So I'm very protective about that, and knows what is HIPAA and back then FDA rules. But we are fully complied with HIPAA. We to the last detail of this compliance. Also, we're implementing SOC 2, which is increasing our, you know, security levels. The Amazon Web Services as a provider comes with a HIPAA certificate. So not that we are inside the capsule of Amazon Web Services. Also, our software is HIPAA compliance. Plus, we're doing right now the SOC 2 certificate. So from this perspective, I feel that what we are complying with all necessary rules and even more. Now, the fact that the data is not leaving the U.S. is very, very important for us. This is one of those things that we're I thought, you know, in terms of that's one of those things, you know, that that medical the medical digital health market change from on-prem to cloud. Now, cloud could be everywhere, but in our case, it's not everywhere. It's in the U.S. and doesn't leave the U.S.
So I feel like from the patient perspective, I can just make a comment where people like, you know, where's my information going? Who's seeing it? I would rather have the robot reading my report and coding my report, because this is the thing. So the one hospital that I go to, if I need services, all those people there know me. They personally know Stacey Buck. Mm-hmm. And I have an issue with the fact that, and I know they're not going to go to tell my information, the people that I work with, because I know some of them personally, but I don't want somebody who knows me personally reading my personal health information. They know personal information about me, which makes me uncomfortable. The fact that when they see me face to face, they've read my medical record and they know what I was in the hospital for, when it's really none of their business. So I feel like on the consumer end, I prefer the technology to read my report and code it. And I feel it's more private to me. I mean, the security of the data is different, and that's addressed by HIPAA. But I feel like I like the anonymity that the AI technology gives me as a patient personally.
Yeah, it's funny. When I used to work as the as a supervisor, I would every now and then have one of my coders come to me and they'd go, Victoria, I can't code this chart. This is my neighbor. And I'm like, well, it's HIPAA. You just don't say anything. No, if it's my neighbor, I know I have to risk that I might accidentally say something. And everyone has different thoughts. I'm just like, I could see everyone in the world's chart and never say a thing to them. But some people, I guess, just have trouble then if they know what's on that medical record, interacting appropriately with people. So, yeah.
Ignorance is bliss in some cases. Like, you don't want to know. You just don't. And yeah. I kind of get that. Like, but I want to know my neighbor's medical information because I'd be thinking about it when I'm talking to them. So I kind of understand it.
Well, this was just so great and so insightful. Do you guys have any kind of closing thoughts about things you want the whole medical coding community to kind of know about autonomous medical coding?
So I would say that I think that, you know, this is a new technology. I could understand, you know, all the skepticism and the fears around that. But A, this is not what you used to see before. This is a completely different technology, and I think that there is a lot of advantage, you know, to use it. And I'm going to be more than happy to elaborate about that to anyone that would like to understand. I think the future is now. You know, the future is really now, and we are harnessing this this future, and it's for everyone to be used. So. I wish to see more clients coming over and asking questions and trying the system. You know?
So yeah, here's absolutely. The question. I'll jump over the question. So is it pronounced autonomous or autonomous? Because I hear it both ways. And I say autonomous, and Victoria says autonomous, and Yossi has been switching back and forth.
Yeah, so, I didn't know.
During this interview. So yeah. Which one are we going with? I've heard it both ways. Pronounced both ways.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. So if anyone out there is interested in signing up with Maverick, where can they find out more information about Maverick Medical Coding?
So we've got our website, maverick-ai.com, and they can find everything over there.
Okay. I will also link it in the video description and my show notes. Thank you so much for coming on the channel and talking to everyone about all of these different AI technologies and about what you do at Maverick. It sounds phenomenal. And I can't wait to see how it's going to transition into more organizations over the next few years. If anyone wants to find out more about Maverick, again, I'm going to have all the information into the channel and the show notes. Thank you so much again for coming on today.
Thank you very much for inviting.
Thank you, Victoria.